drags me down the beach. It's just, he knows this drives me crazy and he does it anyway. She's my baby sister.
And in 2 days she'll be his wife, Oliver. You need to let it go because he's here to stay.
I know, I sigh. I know, I say again, like I'm trying to convince myself. But I only have one baby sister. One. Why the fuck did he have to fall in love with her?
Well,
Kat says as we stop at the dock to wait for Five to come pick us up.
It's my understanding she sort of stalked his ass. She wanted him, so she went and took him. I mean, look, she's your sister. That alone is enough to explain why they're together. But beyond that, they're just soulmates. You can't stop that, even if you want to. You can't.
I sink to my knees in the sand and pull her down with me. And on top of all that, fucking Five has been keeping secrets from me, too. It's like I don't even know these people. I mean, my sister was alive, all those...
Your parents kept that secret, too?
Kat says, interrupting my rant. And Sparrow. And Kate. I know, I say. See what I mean? Who are these people? I don't know any of them. Not really. What do I know, Kat? Tell me. What do I know about them?
Well,
Kat says, looking out at the ocean. It's a beautiful day. Sunny and warm, but not too hot. There's a nice ocean breeze, and the water is the color of paradise.
You know their family, and I guess that's all you need to know. I think you should count yourself lucky if you truly know one person in your life. It's impossible to really know people unless you're sharing things on a very consistent basis. I understand that better than anyone. It was a mistake to leave my sister alone all those years. It was a mistake to depend on some institution to take care of her. And now she's gone.
Well, shit. I rub my hand on my face and let out a long breath of air. Sorry, I say. I know you miss her.
No,
Katya says, turning her head to look at me.
No, I don't miss her.
What? I ask.
I didn't even know her. I don't miss her at all, Oliver. I think that's probably the most disturbing thing I've ever realized about myself.
I have no idea what to say to that, so I just stared down the beach at the dock. So many things are happening right now. Now, as in, like, in this very moment. Pax is fucking my baby sister in that hut over there. Katya is coming to some false realization about herself. Five is in his plane, on his way to pick us up. My parents are probably at home on the farm packing for this trip. Two daughters getting married on the same day. It's some kind of event, right? Huge milestone? Pax's mother is doing the same. Hell, even Nolan's mother is coming. And Ivy's parents. Five's mom and dad are bringing Cade and his little brother and sister. Even the infamous Sasha is showing up. And her FBI husband, Jax. James and Harper will be here with my cousins. Even Merc is coming to this thing. Not to mention all my sisters. It's a big, fucking deal. Right now, all those people are thinking about this trip. Thinking about me and Kat. And all the other misters. Thinking about why we have to hide out here in the middle of the ocean. Thinking about how we'll all be together in one place for the first time ever. Thinking about the risk that comes with this celebration. You do miss her, I finally say.
No, Katya shakes her head. I feel nothing. Not sad, not broken. Not anything. In fact,
she says, wrapping her arm around my biceps as she turns.
I feel better than ever, Oliver. I'm glad it's over. I'm glad we won. I'm glad we're here together. I'm glad you're going to marry me. But most of all, I'm glad she's not here.
I just stare at her.
Because she'd ruin it.
How, Katya?
She frowns, shakes her head. She didn't love me. Me being her sister meant nothing to her.
Yeah, she sighs, waving her hand over towards the hut where Pax is fucking Cindy.
That's kinda rude, she smiles at me. But you love him. He's your best friend. He loves you back, even though he probably won't ever admit it. He's not doing it to hurt you, Oliver. He's doing it because he loves her. It's really got nothing to do with you at all.
I say, staring at the hut. Maybe. But what's that got to do with you and your sister?
Everything she did when I came back to town was done to hurt me, so I'm not going to miss her. I don't need family like that. If that's what family is, then I don't need it.
I lean into her, wrap my arm around her shoulder, and pull her close. That's not what family is, Kat.
I know, she says, smiling up at me. This is family. So just get over it, Ollie. Let them have their fun.
She's right. So I roll my eyes and sigh real loud. Fine. I'm over it. And then she snuggles into my embrace and then points off into the distance as a pod of dolphins swim by. You know what I'm really looking forward to? I ask, staring at the dolphins as they rise and dive to show us their fins.
What?
Seeing Rory and Five together again? I laugh a little. They were meant to be together.
I have to admit, Katya says, I'm a little surprised that you took that news so well. If someone came at me and said my dead sister was actually alive, I'd kind of freak out.
Yeah, but I never bought into it. I can't tell you why. I can't point to, like, one thing and say, this is why I never believed she was dead. I just knew Five would never let it happen, you know? That if Rory was in that kind of danger and things went wrong and she got hurt, he'd never stop until he got his revenge. So there's no way he'd go back to London, start a business, and turn flying seaplanes into his favorite hobby. But it'd be delusional to dwell on that kind of thing, right? Illogical as well. So I just told myself, okay, she's gone, and I'll probably never see her again. But never say never.
Never say never.
Katya sighs back at me. Look, I say, pointing to the sky. There he is, right on time. Fucking Five, Aston. You really can set your watch to that guy. Always shows up when he's supposed to. Pax, I yell, pulling Katya up from the sand with me. Put it back in your pants, asshole, and let's fucking go. We walk over to the stack of luggage piled up on the dock just as Pax and Cindy come running out of their hut. His hair is all messed up, her top is all crooked, and I'm just about to open my mouth and say something about that shit when Katya leans in and kisses me on the neck.
Let it go, she says. Just let it go.
I take a deep breath, huff out my frustration, and see them for what they are. Just two people in love. That's all this is. Just love.
Chapter 7 5 I can see them on the beach as I come towards the island. Oliver and Katya, who I've only met once, and that was before we decided to come clean about Rory being alive. Oliver is like a brother. Even more so than my real brother, Wyatt, who's almost 16 years younger than me. I guess that's how Rory feels about my sister, Kate. She's more of a sister than her own little sister, Cindy, ever was. Cindy was only 6 when we faked Rory's death to keep her safe, and 4 of those years Rory was away at Princeton, so they barely saw each other. I think if this weren't so many Shrike girls, it would have been different. But Oliver really is Cindy's closest sibling. The next time I look down, there they are. Ollie and Cindy together, waiting for me to take them to their long-lost sister. He's gonna hit me hard over this bullshit. It doesn't matter what I say, how I explain it, or what excuse I put up. He's not gonna miss this chance to get even with me for lying. So, I'm ready for it as I land the plane on the water and glide up to the dock. They have a lot of luggage, but it's a wedding after all. The dresses were sent ahead last week, all 5 of them. Rory's mom, Veronica, made her dress last year. So she's bringing that with her when the family gets here tomorrow night. Oliver and Katya reach me first. Pax and Cindy not far behind them. They are all holding hands, and I hold that sight in my mind for a few moments before turning the plane off and opening the door. Hey, man, Oliver says, taking my hand and pulling me into a tight embrace. This is fucking great, right? He's smiling and happy. I get why he'd be happy. He's marrying the absolutely adorable Katya. But, what's wrong? Ollie says. He thinks you're going to kick his ass, Cindy says, coming up with Pax. Dude, Oliver says, why the fuck would I hit you? You brought my sister back from the dead. I have nothing to say. It's just not the reaction I was expecting. So, we're out of here? Pax says. I got my boat hidden in the interior lagoon. You hear anything about any bad weather coming? I don't want it to get banged up while we're gone. Now we're talking about the weather? It's the nicest fucking yacht I've ever owned, and I'm thinking I'd like to keep it a while. Nah, I say, snapping out of it. It's gonna be hot and sunny for the next week. Cool, Pax says, pushing past me. Let's fucking go. He helps Cindy into the new plane. Seats 8 now. It's practically a flying boat. The best on the market today and can take off and land on a runway or water. I could probably start a little tourist business if I wanted. Ollie helps Katya. They claim the last row and immediately begin to chat as we load up the luggage. Nice piece of ass you got here, Pax says. Yeah, Ollie concurs. We should get one of these, huh, Pax? He slaps me on the back. Why are you so quiet, Five? Tell me all about this island you have. Is it better than Pax's? Because if so, he's gonna try to talk me into going in on another one with him. You watch. Yeah. First he's happy to see me, then we're talking weather. Now he's chatting up mysterious about adding a plane and an island to their collection of shared shit. What the fuck is going on with him? Well, I start, trying to shake off the feeling that something is very wrong with Oliver Shrike right now. It's 122 acres. Pax whistles at that. Then he and Oliver exchange a look of mutual envy. And it's got... I rattle off all the specifics. The houses, the barn, the horses, the trails, the bikes. Bikes! Ollie says. Fuck yeah, we're gonna ride this weekend, brother. You got enough for all of us? Nah, I say, letting myself relax a little. Maybe he's gonna be reasonable. They're mostly for the kids. Kids, Oliver laughs. Jesus, I am an uncle again. I cannot wait to see those little princesses. I guess you shoot girls, huh, Five? Pax laughs, like Cindy's father. Hey, Cindy says from the back. You better shoot some girls too, Paxton Vance. I want a whole pack of princesses. Speaking of princesses, Katya says, Nolan and Ivy brought baby Bronte, right? And that's how it goes for the entire ride back to the island. No, why the fuck did you lie to me? No angry outbursts, no playing the blame game. Just normal, everyday life. When we land, all the others are there waiting. Mac and Ellie, Nolan, Ivy and Bronte, West, Tori and Ethan, and of course, my little royal family. Rory squeals at Cindy and Ollie. They hug and dance and cry happy tears. Izza, Anna, Louise and Matilda hover at their mother's side, trying to push their way into the fray of joy. The dogs come up and wag their tails. Hell, a trio of wild pigs even swim up on shore to see what the hell is going on, and that makes everyone even happier. This can't be how it will go, can it? Oliver Shrike isn't gonna try and hit me, kick my ass, take me down a peg or ten. He's really not harboring some resentment over me taking away his sister. I can't believe it. But that's how it's shaking out. Oliver is gonna be... reasonable. My eyes won't be black and blue from my wedding photos. There won't be any loud fights over trust and loyalty. No, I decide. I did it. I pulled it off. The Mr. Wedding is going to be the most perfect, happily ever after in the history of fairy tale endings.
Chapter 8. Mac. It's been a while since all of us have been together. Even longer if you add Five into the mix, because we haven't all seen him since Pax and Cindy had their little run-in with Nolan's sister back in the desert. So it's nice. I like these guys. And not in the way I normally like people, which is mostly based on business decisions and mutual agreements on how to get things done. I just enjoy them. Nolan is probably the most fucked up person I've ever met. But look at him now. The only one of us who was already married. And holding that adorable baby girl, If you had asked me a few years ago if Mr. Romantic would ever get married and have kids, I'd have laughed in your face. Weston should be way more fucked up than he actually is. I mean, his genetic family were all kinds of out there. And his adopted family were on their own personally funded crazy train. Crazy jet, crazy spaceship. I'd never have pegged corporate as a second chance kind of guy, but here he is. Committing to a woman who could probably take him in a fight. Business or otherwise. Paxton. Jesus Christ. Even though he's not nearly as twisted as Nolan, he's definitely the most dangerous of all of us. Mr. Dangerous, they should have called him. He and Oliver have been tight for years, when I found out Pax had fallen for Ollie's sister. Well, I mostly went to that little impromptu meeting at Nolan's resort just to see them fight. I wasn't disappointed. Which leaves Oliver. He did fight with Pax over his baby sister, but he's holding it together for now. Probably because of the wedding. Mr. Match is one of those never-see-them-coming kind of guys, you know, the quiet type who snaps one day and decides to lock himself away in a mountain cabin for the rest of his life, making his own ammo and living off the land. But you know what I don't understand? Hey, Ellie says, coming up to take my hand and give it a squeeze. Hey, I say, letting that thought dissipate as I take in my future wife. What are you thinking so hard about? Oh, nothing. Just taking it all in, you know? It's hard to believe that whole Mister thing might be over. Too good to be true, Ellie says, reading my mind. Yeah, I sigh. It's over, Mac. I turn my head to look down at her. Ellie is so pretty. She's not seductive like Victoria, and she's not crazy like Cindy. Or even dangerous like Katya, or innocent like Ivy. She's just pretty normal. I like that. So much. You sure about that? I ask, enjoying her small smile. She squeezes my hand again. God damned positive. I huff out a small chuckle. I'm glad you brought Ming with you. Yeah, me too, she says. No, I mean, really glad. She's symbolic, right? Is she? And now it's Ellie's turn to laugh. Yeah. Of your life before me, which was pretty damn good. And that's kind of like a good omen for me. Like, your life from now on will be pretty damn good, too, because you're bringing the most important parts along with you, like the book stuff. That next book is going to be another hit. You really know your way around a self-help plan. I sometimes wonder if I'm taking you off track, you know? I don't want to do that, Ellie. I want you to be all the things you were before. What was I before? She asks. Perfect, I answer back. Shit, she says, shaking her head. It was a fucking mess before you came along. Not true. You were the most valuable employee at Stonewall. And if you were still there, you'd probably be vice president by now. Oh, come on, she snorts. Ellie, I say, taking both her hands in mine. The sun is just beginning to set, coating the surface of the ocean with a red-gold blanket of ripples. It reflects off her beautiful face. Makes her shine in a way that makes me want to touch her cheek, just to make sure she's real. You were Mrs. Perfect long before I came along. She looks away, allowing herself a sweeping smile as she studies the disappearing sun. You know what that means, right? What? I ask. We really are Mr. and Mrs. Perfect. Soulmates. We are, I say, leaning down to kiss her. I want to say more, things like, you're the sweetest thing I've ever laid eyes on, or you make me better, or a thousand other sappy things that men say just before their wedding. But all that comes out is a promise. I'm going to be yours forever. She stares up at me and frowns. You don't have to cheer me up, Mac. Ellie, you're enough. You're more than enough. I refuse to be sad for things that aren't meant to be. This is a celebration. And there's no place for future regrets or past mistakes or even present problems. This is our happy time. Oh, Ellie, there's so much more to come, I whisper, kissing her soft lips until she opens her mouth to kiss me back. Like what? She sighs back. Butter, I say. We both crack up laughing, and everything she just said comes to pass, because we forget all the future regrets, all the past mistakes, and all the present problems. We'll always have the butter, she laughs. Always, babe.
Chapter 9. Nolan. You know what we should do, I say to Ivy. She's feeding Bronte some freshly pureed bananas picked right off of this fucking island. Rory took her around to all the different orchards they have here, and they picked fruit to mash up for my baby daughter. I kinda love Rory already. Bronte is gobbling it up like she's never had bananas before. She has, and they're not her favorite, unless it comes in the form of banana bread, which also gets mashed up, but mostly by Bronte's chubby little fingers.
What should we do?
Ivy asks, between making goofy faces at the baby.
We should go on a date.
I mean, shit. We've got all these built-in babysitters at our disposal right now, plus we're like, in paradise, right? We should definitely go on a date tonight.
Where? Ivy laughs, looking over her shoulder at me.
The beach, I say.
I have a beach fantasy all ready for you. Been planning it for weeks now.
Really? She asks, shooting me a coy wink. Tell me about it.
No, I say.
That spoils all the fun.
You mean we don't need a signed contract for this one?
You're my wife, Ivy. I know you better than you know yourself. I don't think I need to ask permission anymore.
She raises one eyebrow at me. It's not a cute eyebrow raise either.
Not that way, I say. Get your mind off Martha's Vineyard.
Good God, she laughs. I never think about that night.
Yeah, that fucking Richard. He ruined everything.
Well, yes, he really did, but... She says, then pauses for a moment. Your fantasy was way out of my comfort zone.
Mine too, I say, suddenly serious. But that's not what I'm talking about either.
I just mean a good time, me doing things you like.
I waggle my eyebrows at her.
You mean, like ordinary men?
I'm ordinary, I say.
Nah, she says, shaking her head. You're very extraordinary, Nolan.
But anyway, back to your offer. I think a date night sounds fun. We've barely done anything alone since Bronte was born.
I know, I sigh. And I like being with both of you every night. Love it, but I feel like we might have missed out on a few things. We got married so fast, and all that bullshit with the misters really put a cramp into our honeymoon time. Not to mention I was pregnant.
And that too. I say. I wasn't going to bring it up, but fuck. Things got serious, like, immediately.
A fun night, just for us.
If you can find a sitter.
Are you kidding? I bet all of them want to sit for us tonight.
Okay. Go set it up and I'll get Bronte to sleep.
I do a silent yes with an imaginary fist pump as I exit our cabana. I'm going to take her down to the beach, get her naked, and then...
Hey!
I yell, noticing West leaving his cabana with Ethan.
Weston!
He waves, but barely gives me a second look.
West!
I yell again, jogging to catch up with him and the kid. This time he stops, realizing I'm calling his name for a reason that has nothing to do with a greeting. Fucking corporate. Sometimes he's slow on the uptake.
Yeah? What's up?
What are you guys up to tonight? I ask.
just taking Ethan down to the beach to throw the ball around. He tosses a football in the air, and Ethan, quick little shit that he is, grabs it and then runs off. Fun, I say, actually meaning it. I can't wait until Bronte is old enough to throw a ball around, but that's not going to be for a while. And right now, what I really need is a babysitter, so I can show Ivy a sexy time tonight. What do you say? Can you guys watch the baby for us? Shit, man. West says, looking at the empty dirt path where Ethan disappeared. If I can catch him, maybe. And even then, this kid, he's kind of wild, Nolan, crazy about sports. He's going to make me toss that ball until it gets too dark to see. Cool. I'm weirdly jealous. How about Tori? She up for some baby Bronte time? West looks around like he's making sure no one's listening. She can't. She's sick. Sick, I ask. What's wrong with her? Don't say nothing, okay? Who would I tell? It's pregnancy stuff. I bet it was the boat trip. Damn it, I should have seen that coming. Oh, I say, remembering the conversation this morning about Ellie. Welp, I guess I can't ask Ellie to babysit either. That sucks. Sorry she's not feeling well, but I think I can talk Cindy or Katya into doing it. So no worries. Go have fun with your boy. Did boy just come out sarcastically? No. No. I didn't just do that. But Weston picks up on it and narrows his eyes. Did you just... Nope, I say. You don't admit that you really wanted a boy instead of a girl. And you don't get jealous of your friends who do have a boy. It's just not done. So I'm in denial. You're sure? West asks. Positive. I blank my face like you do in poker. You're lying, West says. You're fucking lying. Ivy doesn't know. No, dude, and I'm not lying. My daughter is the most beautiful baby ever born. And you dressed her up in a Top Gun outfit for the ride over here. That was cool, right? West laughs. Yeah, I fucking loved it. I told Tori we're taking those hand-me-downs, and boy or girl, that's how my next kid will dress. See? I say. Ivy just rolled her eyes at me, but I knew it was a great outfit. Dad! Ethan yells from somewhere. Come on! Well, West says, I gotta go. He's wild, Nolan. Count yourself lucky to have that sweet baby girl. Boys, man. High insurance rates, drunken games of beer pong, and sports doctors are all I see in my future. I hope I have a girl next. I already know how to throw a football. I'd like to learn how to throw a tea party. And with that, he turns and jogs off after his wild kid. Two strikes right out of the gate. I head the other direction where I know Pax's cabana is, but I can hear him singing an army cadence song before I even get to the door. I want to be an airborne ranger. Live me a life of blood and danger. I open the door and find him lying on the bed, head hanging over the edge upside down. He smells like tequila. Paxton? Airborne ranger, blood and danger. His eyes swing around the room as he looks for me. And he slumps over the side of the bed and drops to the floor. Nolan! He croons, crawling forward. Sing with me! I want to be a scuba diver! He points, but I just stand there, kind of fucking stunned. Sing it! He yells. I want to be a scuba diver, I sing. Jump right in that muddy water, he points to me again. Jump right in. But then I realize he's way too drunk to look after my baby, so I don't really need to play along. Where's Cindy? I ask. I want to have a date night with Ivy and I need a sitter. Party! He yells. Muddy water scuba diver! I leave. He's got issues. Obviously. Okay, so I can't ask Ellie because it might make her sad. I can't ask Victoria because she's sick. Cindy is apparently partying. So that leaves me with Katya or Rory. I look over at the main house sitting up on a hill. It's big for an island house. Big enough for four kids and a wife? That I'm not so sure about. I'd go crazy on this island if I had to stay here all the time. But I head up the path that leads to the house anyway. Partly because it looks inviting and friendly in the coming dusk, and partly because it's my last hope of having some alone time with Mrs. Romantic tonight. I'm just coming around a little twist in the path when two tiny masked people jump out from the bushes and scare me half to death.
"Who goes there?"
one of the little shits demands. I say, "It's me? Nolan?"
"How do we know it's you?"
the other tiny shit asks. "It's me," I say. "You saw me earlier when I got off the helicopter, remember?"
"Then what are our names?"
the first one asks. Jesus. Fucking kids, right? "I can't see your faces," I say. I really don't remember, and I just want to get up to the house to ask for help, so I try to push past them. The smaller one pokes her pointy stick into my gut and says,
"I command you to stop in the name of the Queen!"
I'm getting kind of irritated now, so I say, "You guys, it's me, Nolan Delaney. I'm one of the misters. I'm your dad's friend."
"If you're his friend, then what are our names?"
I think real hard. Five did introduce them. They aren't the twins. They're too short. So I concentrate on the smaller kids in my memory. They both had long, wild brown hair, and they both have wide brown eyes peeking through eye holes, which isn't helpful, I realize, because they look more alike than the damn twins. Not to mention they're wearing masks. Not ski masks, something looser and made of cotton. More like a hood. "Where'd you get those masks?" I ask, trying to change the subject, because I have no idea what Five calls them.
"We made them,"
the taller one says.
"With our hands,"
the little one clarifies. The tall one asks,
"Does your wife sew, Nolan Delaney?"
"Does Ivy sew?"
"Yeah,"
I say. I'm pretty sure Ivy does shit like that, so my answer comes out confident.
"Do you sew?"
the smaller one asks.
"No,"
I laugh. "I don't sew."
"Why not?"
they both demand at the same time.
"I'm a dude,"
I say, still chuckling.
"Our daddy sews. He made us these capes."
They are some pretty nice capes, made out of black felt. And they have some kind of logo on the back, like superheroes or something.
"And he taught us to make spears."
They both shove their pointed sticks at me again.
"Ow, Jesus, you guys. I just want to go talk to Kat and see if she'll babysit for me tonight. Can I go now?"
The taller one lifts up her black mask to show me her face.
"Why do you need a babysitter?"
"Because I want to go on a date with my wife. And you're 6 years old, so I'm not telling you any more details."
"I'm 7, she snaps. "And you don't even know my name, do you?"
"Maggie, I guess. I'm pretty sure it starts with M."
"Wrong,"
the little one says.
"Martha,"
I try again.
"Nope."
"Hey," I say, kneeling down so I can look them in the eyes. "How about you tell me your names, and then I'll remember them forever this time, and you guys let me go up there and ask Kat to babysit for me, deal?" They look at each other and laugh. "What's so funny?"
"No deal,"
the older one says.
"You're our prisoner now."
And then they poke me again.
"This way, prisoner,"
the tiny one barks.
"March!"
I do as I'm told, because I'm directed to march up towards the house. I figure Five will show up eventually and call off his mini-assassins, so it's easier to just go along. But they don't lead me to the front door. They lead me around the back and stop me in front of a window.
"Look,"
the older one says, pointing her stick at the window. And that's when I get attacked by a pack of kittens.
"Ow, motherfuckers!"
I shake my leg and kittens go flying into the grass and both of the little girls fall to their knees giggling.
"They got you,"
the tiny one exclaims.
"They got you good,"
laughs the older one. And yeah, there's blood running down my legs from a dozen kitten claw marks. I sigh
count to five to keep my temper under control, and say through gritted teeth, "I'm going to look for Katya now."
"She's right there," the older one says. "Look."
So I look through the window, because that's where her stupid pointy stick is telling me to look. And sure enough, I see both Katya and Rory in a room.
"They're putting the final touches on her wedding dress. My mommy can make dresses," the little one says.
"Pretty, pretty dresses," the taller one adds.
"So she can't babysit for you."
I stare at them and throw up my hands. "Fine. I'll just go back to my bungalow and forget about date night."
"I'm Louise," the small one says.
"And I'm Matilda," the other one says. "Very pleased to meet you both," I say, turning to leave.
"Don't you want to ask our daddy to babysit?"
Louise asks. I stop and turn, look at them for a second, and get hopeful. "Do you think he will?" They both have another fit of giggles. I take that as a no and turn to leave again.
"Wait,"
they both say, dropping their spears and taking my hands.
"We've got plans for you, Nolan Delaney," Matilda says.
"I don't have time. I gotta get back to..."
"You have to go to prison for trespassing," Louise says. 30 minutes in the gulag."
"It's the law," Matilda says, her voice serious as all hell. And then they push and drag me over to a small playhouse. It looks like a mini castle, and there's a light on inside.
"Just play along, Nolan," the voice in my head says. "Go inside, stay 5 minutes, and then back out carefully."
So I let them lead me towards the playhouse, thankful that they're not still poking me with those stupid pointy sticks. Inside, it looks like a princess threw up. Two princesses, really. There's a small table in the center with a tea set laid out on a white tablecloth with eyelet lace edges. And each of the four small chairs has a fuzzy pink pillow on the seat.
"Sit,"
Louise commands. So I sit. Way too big for this chair, my knees practically touching my chin, half hoping I break the thing, half hoping I don't, since that would probably add another 30 minutes to my gulag sentence. They pour me tea, which is water, and feed me cakes, which is crackers. And I realize I actually am on a date, just not with my wife. And that makes me smile. They tell me stories about their life on the island. And those damn kittens find their way into my lap, and pretty soon they pronounce me free and caution me not to break any more laws. And then I'm pushed outside the castle and told to go straight home, or the king will be angry. I wander down several pathways, trying to find the one that leads back to my cabana, wondering what the fuck just happened, thinking maybe girls aren't that different than boys. Imagining myself with Bronte when she's that age and kind of liking that image. Say what you want about Five and his secret island. He's got some cool kids. I smile as I walk through the cabana door, calling out, "Ivy?" But she doesn't answer back. And when I wander into the bedroom, I see why. She and Bronte are all wrapped up together. Bronte's face pressed against Ivy's breast. Ivy's fingers twined into Bronte's fine, loose curls of blonde hair. Fast asleep. "Fuck it," I sigh, but I'm smiling all the way through that sigh. It wasn't the date night I imagined, but it might have been better. I crawl into bed, Bronte between us. And if this was yesterday, that might have been a bad sign. It might have meant that Bronte was an interloper, that we're kind of doomed. That things went too fast, changed too quick. That we'll never be the people we were before. I think all those things are true now as well. But not in the bad way. My daughter will grow up to be one of those little shits out on that path. She will poke me and frustrate me. But she will delight me with surprises too. I think... maybe raising a girl is going to be a blast. And I need to learn how to do it right.
Chapter 10. West. West.
Tori is prodding me.
What?
I mumble, still mostly asleep.
Wake up.
Why?
Ethan is gone again.
Fuck. I lie still for a few seconds, forcing myself awake.
I'm gonna go find him, Tori says. You stay here.
No, I say, pulling her back into me before she can escape. It's an island, I say. How much trouble can he get in on an island? This is something Ethan's been doing for a while now. It started a few weeks after we moved to Fort Collins, and part of me wonders if the move was too much for him. I mean, we did pull him from his life in New York. However messed up that was, it was still his life. And we moved him out to L.A., which is a culture shock all its own. And then a few months later, he was living in Fort Collins. Colorado isn't extreme in any way. It's not New York, and it's not L.A., which are the two most opposite cities in the entire U.S. It's just a small town place with looming mountains and unpredictable weather. It's slow and calm and pretty. That's it. But he wasn't used to slow and calm and pretty. He was used to big and loud and city.
He could drown in the ocean, Tori says.
He's a great swimmer, I say. He took to the ocean like he was born on Nantucket. And then I turn to her, hug her close, and say, we could make the most of it, you know. Have a little sexy fun.
Weston Conrad.
I swing my legs out of bed, rub my hands up and down my face, and look over my shoulder at Tori. I'll go find him. She smiles and squeezes my hand.
I know he's fine, but he's a little boy. We can't let him keep doing this.
I know, I say, pulling on my shorts and reaching for a t-shirt. I get it.
Tori sighs. I know he thinks he's big, but he's not, West. He needs to learn how to be a kid.
I get it, I say, deciding to go barefoot. This island is filled with sand. Probably gets filled on some kind of regular basis, because all the pathways are white and soft and feel very fucking good on bare feet. I stumble out of the cabana and look around. It's dark. I didn't catch the time, and I'm not wearing my watch, but I grew up on the ocean. And one look at the stars, one look at the Pleiades high on the southern sky, tells me it's about 1 a.m. I'm always the one who goes looking for Ethan at home, too. I tell Tori he only goes to the porch, and most of the time he is on the porch, but I found him at City Park once. And sitting outside Shrike Bikes a second time, both of which are about half a mile from our house. I would have called the police both times, but then they'd start asking questions and... yeah, we don't need that. Besides, I think I get Ethan in a way that Tori doesn't, a way that most people won't. So I wandered down towards the closest beach first, because if I was 8 again, and I was on this island... that's exactly where I'd be. I hear a weird humming sound before I get there, and once I push past the final few palm fronds and the sea comes into view, I understand what it is. Mr. Mysterious, lying down on the sand, staring up at the stars, singing some kind of army marching song under his breath. Hey, I say, walking over to him. What's up? I sink down into the sand next to him, and he turns his head. Fuck, he smells like a goddamn bar. Drunk, he says. I can see that. Why are you out here on the beach? I don't know, he slurs. I stare at him for a second. I don't think I know Paxton Vance all that well, but I don't think anyone really knows him. So I don't mind that too much. He's a friend, for sure. He saved my ass, and Tori's, couple times at least. So even though he's mostly an insufferable jerk, he's the kind of insufferable jerk you can't help but like. We're getting married, he says after a long silence. Yep. You worried about that? I ask. Are you? He asks, turning his head towards me. But his eyes are closed. He's too fucked up to even see me shrug. Not really, I say. The seconds tick off, and it's pretty clear he's not going to offer up anything else. So I say, but it's weird, right? Yeah, he mumbles. She's probably going to hate me in, like, 6 months. What? I laugh. Cindy Shrike? Dude, if ever there was a girl who could rein you in, it's her. I don't want to be reined in. It comes out like one long, drunk word, and then he sings, just a little bit louder. I want to be an airborne ranger. Live me a life of blood and danger. Ah, I say, leaning back in the sand to rest on my elbows. It makes sense now. He's Mr. Fucking Mysterious, and he's about to get married, which probably makes him think all that exciting shit he's been doing for the past, well, his whole life, I guess, is now over. I don't really know what to tell him, because you can't play that game forever, not if you want a love life. I know that better than most. Hell, I might just be plain old Mr. Corporate, but my childhood was about as mysterious as it gets. Which reminds me of why I'm here. You seen my kid anywhere? He points to the ocean. There, he says. I squint my eyes and focus on where he's pointing. I'm making sure he don't drown. Pax sighs. Just being a good friend. Which makes me laugh. Like a real, honest-to-goodness laugh. I don't know if you're really qualified to play lifeguard, but what the fuck is he doing? Ethan is nothing but a black silhouette against a gray night sky lit up by a rising moon. He's standing on a rock, waves crashing all around him, one arm drawn back. Spear fishing, Pax says, opening his eyes to look at me, like that explains everything. He came up, asked me if I had a knife. Why? To make a fucking spear, Pax growls. So I gave him my knife. Okay, I say, like this is all just normal shit for a Mr. Kid. Because it is. Ethan's got some kind of story to tell. I'm just not sure he's ever gonna tell it. I guess I better go get him. Brawley, Pax says, eyes closed again. I can't watch everybody, Weston Conrad. I can't. Not if I want to be happy. And that explains everything, too. So I say, you've been relieved of duty, soldier. And then I slap him on the stomach, which makes him groan and push me away. I stand up so I can look down at him. Find another army to work for. This one doesn't need you anymore. I walk out to the beach, swim over to the rock outcropping Ethan is standing on, and pull myself up, dripping wet. It feels like coming home for some reason. Hey, Ethan says, just before he throws his spear. Hey, I say, watching it hit the target below the surface of the water. Ethan jumps into the ocean, fearless, determined. He grabs his spear, and then hoists himself and his catch back up onto the rocks. He slides the fish off the end of the stick, and it plops down into his pile. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 10. 10 fucking fish on this pile of rocks. Looks like you've caught your quota, I say. He stares at me for a second, squinting in the bright moonlight, then looks at his catch and seems to do a mental calculation. Do you think it's enough? For what? I ask, genuinely curious. Breakfast, he says, like this is obvious. I'm pretty sure Five and Rory have enough food for everyone. We don't need to provide it. I know, Ethan says. And for an 8-year-old, he sure does come across like he's walked this earth forever. So we're good, I ask. We can go to bed now. He stares up at me like he really wants to say no. But then he looks out at the beach where Pax is still singing his Airborne Ranger song and says, Okay, but we can come back tomorrow, right? Sure, I say. Sure. I'll bring you back tomorrow to fish. Ethan nods at me and then produces a fishing line, hooks all his fish onto it, and hoists it over his shoulder. Cool, he says, jumping back into the water. We swim back, drag ourselves out of the ocean, and head towards the bungalows. How old were you? He asks. When? I ask. When you had to fish for a living. Older than you, I say. Which is a lie. I was his age exactly, but I don't want him to know too much about who I was back then. How much older? Ethan persists. A few years. And that's when you found that gold? Shit. Where'd you hear about that? I heard Oliver talking to Katya a while back. I search my memory for when he'd have that opportunity and come up blank. I snuck out, Ethan says, like he's reading my mind. And I was over at Oliver's house. Oliver lives down the street from Shrike Bikes. And suddenly I realize I have no idea what my son does at night. Did they know you were there? I ask. Nope, he says through a smile. I'm sneaky when I want to be. Very. I laugh. But it's late, Ethan, and I need to think about this for a little bit before we talk anymore. So do you think, for your mother's sake, you can stop being sneaky until we have that talk? Why? He asks. Because she's worried about you. He stops walking, which makes me stop walking, and he says, Are you worried about me? My entire childhood flashes before my eyes, and I think about his question. All the things I did, the people I was around, the danger, and the excitement, and the mystery. And I decide, No. No, I'm not that worried, Ethan. Good, he says, starting to walk again. Because I can take care of myself. I like you guys, so I stick around, but I don't need you guys. I watch him go. Just stand there on the path and watch him go. He disappears through the jungle of palm trees and tropical ferns. Yeah, Pax says, stumbling up to me. He's here because he wants to be. And there's nothing you can do to change that, West. And then it's his turn to slap me in the gut. Because that kid is just like us. We were born this way. This is just who we are. And putting him in a pretty house, on a peaceful street, and giving him parents can't change that. I watch him disappear through the trees, too. Wondering if there's any hope for us at all. Have we been through too much? Did we fuck it all up years ago and there's no going back? I mean, look at us. Even perfect Mr. Perfect is struggling with normal life. Nolan is in way over his head with that baby girl. Everyone can see it. I've adopted a kid who's lived through something big, and he's never going to forget it. Mysterious is already missing his old life, and the new one hasn't even started. And Match? Match is trying to pretend nothing's happening. Nothing to see here. Everything's great. But it's all an illusion, isn't it? Just one big, fat lie.
Chapter 11. Pax. I don't know how long I wandered the jungle after I left West and the kid, but I do know I passed out. And when I finally open my eyes again and figure out I'm on the beach again, I start humming, I wanna be an airborne ranger, Live me a life of blood and danger. I turn my head and realize Cindy is next to me. The sand is cold, so I absently wonder if she's cold. Hey, I say. My voice is all raspy and my head is still kind of spinning.
I wanna be a scuba diver.
She sings, softly. Not the way it's supposed to be, all loud and chanty for marching. Jump right in that muddy water, I say.
Scuba diver,
she whispers, placing her head on my chest, like she wants to make sure I'm still here, that my heart is still beating. Muddy water, I reply.
I wanna be a paramedic,
she continues. Shoot some blissful anesthetic.
Airborne ranger.
Muddy water.
Anesthetic.
It's not what you think, I say, ending the song.
I don't think anything, detective. I'm just here, you know?
I'm not having second thoughts, I say, wanting to make this clear. Not about you, anyway. She props herself up on her elbow and stares at me. The moon is setting, but it's enough light to see the blue of her eyes.
Then what's going on?
I did something, I say. Something... She swallows hard.
Something you need to talk to me about?
She asks, her voice shaking slightly. I nod my head.
So talk.
I take a deep breath and let it out. Try and think of where to begin, but it's all pretty fucked up. So I turn my head and stare up at the stars.
I was with Rory tonight,
Cindy says, changing the subject. I look at her again, study her. I don't deserve this woman. Not at all. How'd it go?
Good,
Cindy says, lying back down in the sand. She puts her hands behind her head and just stares up at the dark sky.
She's like...
And then she laughs.
She's just like my mom. It's so weird. I mean, I never thought of her as a sister, not really. We're so far apart in age, you know?
But I don't know. I don't have any siblings. I have almost no family at all. Just my mom, who is very cool as far as moms go. Maybe not as kick-ass as Veronica Shrike, but still. I love my mom. And she can hold her own as far as I'm concerned.
I was gonna watch a movie the other day,
Cindy says, changing the subject again. She looks at me. We stare at each other.
But there was already a movie in the Blu-ray.
I wince.
It was challenge accepted.
Yeah, I say. I was watching it a couple weeks ago. I guess I forgot to put it back.
Charles was pretty good in that movie. I watched it. Just curious, you know. I was trying to see if you looked like him.
Do I? I ask.
Yeah,
she says.
Like, kinda a lot. It's weird. You look like a movie star, Pax.
Well, I laugh. Then I guess it's a good thing you look like a starlet, Miss Cookie. We're perfect for each other.
Destined to be together,
she adds. Destined, I say. For sure.
Do you want to stay out here on the beach, or do you want to come to bed with me?
I smile. Bed.
Then let's go.
She stands up, grabs my hand, and then pulls. I'm still a little bit drunk, so it takes me a second, but I get it together and don't lean on her too much as we find our way back to the bungalow. When we get inside, we leave the lights off. She lifts up my shirt and I help her get it over my head. Then she unbuckles my shorts and pulls them down. I just stare at her, wondering what she's thinking right now. She bites her lip and I want to kiss it. I want her to stop thinking. I want to take her to bed and hold her tight and just forget what I did. I wait for the question to come again, but it doesn't. She just sighs as she takes off her shirt. She's got no bra on, like she was in bed before she came looking for me. And then she wiggles her shorts over her hips, lets them drop to the floor, and takes my hand again. She leads me to the bed and we get in, cover up with the soft covers, and hug each other, hold each other close. I wonder how she got so patient, because she's very patient with me. We've done some crazy shit over the past year. We started our own investigation business, and we've made a pretty good go at it. We mostly stay in Fort Collins to be near friends, who are now her friends, and her family, who are now my family. But we travel a lot, mostly to Southern California, since that's where most of my clients are. I don't fix things for people anymore. Usually. But I'm in the middle of some fixing right now.